Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you, introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode. So click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by PDAX. PDAX is a homegrown cryptocurrency exchange that offers the best rates among local cryptocurrency exchanges. Download the PDAX app now on the Google Play Store, App Store, or Huawei App Gallery. Start trading Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other cryptocurrencies for as low as 50 pesos by signing up on podlink.co/hustleshare PDAX. Also powered by Podmetrics, the easiest way to monetize your podcast. Sign up now at podmetrics.co for free and use the code HustleShare.
Just keep thinking, just keep iterating, do like smallest projects you can do. And if you're persistent enough and if you're honest with yourself enough, then you'll eventually build something that really resonates with you. And I'm super lucky. I'm super blessed that I'm in this situation where I get to do that now.
Welcome to HustleShare, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here is your host, Ronster Baitiong.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Hustle Share podcast. This podcast just keeps younger and younger. You know, we're almost 3 years old, and I feel like every single year that I do this podcast has returned into our third anniversary soon. The types of founders I've been getting lately are borderline kids that need to bless to me before they answer the million-dollar question. And this is another example of another founder who's been doing an amazing job, you know, blazing the trail for talents in the Philippines and the world over. But before I get carried away, let's welcome the CEO and co-founder of this startup that's literally up next. His name is Javi Lorenzana of Up Next. Welcome to the show, Javi.
Thanks so much for inviting me, Ron. Again, super huge fan of what you guys are doing. Super excited for this conversation.
All right. Again, bless, because I'm your Tito Ronster now. It's so funny because a lot of the guys that I've had on first season, first 1.5 season, are typically my bros. Like, you know, people now just for some reason just stick during the pandemic. We just went younger and younger and younger, which is also a testament to the type of founders we're getting in the startup ecosystem, because young and kids, like, you know, again, I don't want to call you kids because you guys are grown ass men as well, but the type of founders and the type of products you guys are building, it's just, you know, unprecedented growth and also quality, because most founders at the that start at that age, especially when I was starting out, man, that's fucking, I feel so old, like around 10, 11 years ago, didn't have a rat's clue technically of how to build it. But before I did, I get carried away. Again, congratulations for what you guys do. But I need to ask you the $1 million question. Javi, what's your hustle?
Thanks, Ron. So again, my name is Javi and I'm building Up Next. Up Next is what I like to describe as education for the future of work, right? Mm-hmm. So essentially what we do is we build live cohort-based online programs. And these programs are taught by top executives and operators from Asia's most disruptive companies. So Alibaba, ByteDance, and Grab. The goal here is really to build a place where professionals can sort of upskill, right, for this really changing like internet economy. You know, surrounded by that community of just like curated peers. Some of our students are, say, managers at big consumer brands, operators at fast-growing startups, and even like students, right, who want to develop sort of that unfair career advantage. So that's what's up next.
There you go. Up next. So MBA students, say goodbye to your diploma. Or if you're going doctorate, this is the future of work in the future. Of education. And that's exciting because, again, I've seen similar models, like, you know, your friends. I'm pretty sure you guys are friends with the Avion schools who are teaching any random guy to become a hireable developer and whatnot. And now this is a new spectrum that you're talking about, but with operators to upskill. And again, in this new day and age where, you know, crypto is king, metaverse is king, it's a whole new playground where
it's a new ball game.
Correct. And at the end of the day, your typical Microsoft Word or whatever stuff that that's getting taught in school is ancient as hell. And you need to be on top. And I love what you guys do. But before I get carried away, again, I need you to buckle up because we're going to go back through the metaverse timeline because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine. All right. See, I've been traveling the metaverse unknowingly for the past 3 years and disrupting the space-time continuum because of this jeepney of a Hustle Share time machine, which, by the way, I'll be having a merch that depicts how it looks like. Really very
NFTs.
Excited.
You're going to drop NFTs, Ron.
Yes, the Hustle Share time machine will be dropping that. But I want to understand from your point of view, right? So... How did your journey start in terms of startups or early hustling? How is it blowing up? Because again, I'm looking at your LinkedIn, and you came from a school that are very popular in creating awesome founders. So most recently, the Dash Lab guys, you know, were YC founders, came from Xavier School. But what's it like growing up for you?
Yeah, no, I mean, a lot of people generally, you know, they're kind of surprised, like I'm super young, but I think what isn't obvious is that I've sort of been in this game. Like I've been in this game for a while. So I think you might have probably seen that, you know, I've been working at startups, media companies, like here and like even abroad in Europe and Silicon Valley for around, I think, 7 years now.
And how like, young are you?
So I'm 21.
What? Right now, so yeah. 21 and you've been working on this for 7 years. Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, like in that time, it's been, you know, a lot of just like work experiences, like there, attending like all these networking sessions, participating in like hosting all these hackathons. And definitely, like, as you mentioned, right, like I think being in Xavier was kind of, I think, like accidental, but like, cause a lot of my mentors and friends really did influence me sort of growing up in this.
Shout out Martin Gomez.
Shout out Martin Gomez.
There you go. This is one of your disciples now doing their thing in the world. Wow. So what's it about? Because I'm just curious. I've seen amazing developers or hackers who start really young. My God, if you've been doing this for 7 years and you're just 21, what the hell do they even teach you in Xavier? Because other programs, you know, every school has their computer class, you know, they teach you the basics of all the stupid stuff that is mostly passé. But what do they teach you in Xavier, and how deep do you get immersed that even beyond school, the behavior that I see is you really get hooked and you this becomes an early part of your adolescent life.
Right. I mean, I won't say, I don't think it was Xavier that gave me more of the startup mindset. I think like a lot of Xavier and still generally take, you know, more quote unquote traditional paths. I think I think I was lucky to some extent that I was able to meet good people in Xavier, like Martin Gomez from Dash Labs, like John from Avion, who was literally my seatmate in math class growing up. I think it was just being with those people and I guess finding that subset, and that was what really sort of got me right. So in some sense, there's some curation that had come there, finding that community within Xavier. So yeah, I think that's what it did a good job of.
But what were those things that you guys tinkered around with? Again, Martin's a perfect example because again, he technically harnessed the Martin Giggers of the world, the Wes Colemans of the world, yes, and whatnot, right? what were those conversations like? Because this reminds me very much of like Spider-Man pre-MIT. Okay, like this, you guys are, you know, obviously part of a smaller group, but the stuff you're working on is, or at least you're discussing or working with, is already again years or light years ahead of what's going on in the real world.
Yeah, I mean, like finding those conversations, so you have to, I think what I did well was sort of find a way to hack into that specific community. And I think it's a lot of like just being able to find those opportunities. So how I met Martin, it was actually pretty funny. So I think this is a pretty fun example like of hack being able to hack into like one of those situations, right? So during our Xavier high school days, I think this was towards my maybe 11th or 12th grade, we essentially saw this, I think, case competition done by the UP JMA dudes. Shout out Kalkua from PDAX.
There you go. and they were JMA, famous people, yeah, to get in college people really drunk during ad hoc.
Exactly. So they had this case competition called MIBC. And when we saw like the flyer for it, I remember just seeing, wow, this is for college kids. But, you know, they have great companies from ABS-CBN, Lazada, Shopee, et cetera, et cetera. So I actually applied as a high school student to this college case competition. And I explicitly remember having to fill out a form. Okay. And I had to say that I was so concerned that I would get disqualified if they found out I was in high school. So I had to write, I'm from UP, dude. Like, I'm from UP, man.
Wow.
So that happened. And that is actually like where like I sort of met Martin, right? And it's funny because we actually like ended up winning the case competition, like at least like my team. And that's when I sort of like was able to build a relationship with not just like Martin, but like all of these different cool random dudes in tech, right? So I guess that's how it happened.
Yeah. If you remember again from 7 years ago, that's how far along you've been doing this. What were you guys building? Because tech has evolved heavily over the past 7 years. 7 years ago, I remember, again, we're still web 2.0. Yes. Mobile just became mobile first. You know, it's just crazy that, you know, everything now is pretty much done on our phones, and most of our phones are actually more powerful sometimes by compared to our desktop machines, right? But what were the stuff that you were tinkering on as a high school student? Because what I remember during this time is there's also a dearth of, or again, a big lack of knowledge in the developer world. There just wasn't enough quality developers back then. I mean, till now, there's still a big gap. Yeah. That's why people poach each other's devs, technically, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
what were you guys doing where, again, you were just an up and up where, again, you're not even on the workforce yet. What were you guys building back then?
I think for my, so I don't think like I was really building anything, but what I was doing is I was really optimizing for learning, right? So I would do, I think like pretty like difficult or something every other summer, every year, like I do an internship, have it like bleed into the school year, but I explicitly wanted to take roles in different types of sectors, performing different types of roles, right? So in 1 year I'd be doing marketing, and 1 year I'd be doing customer service, and 1 year I'd be doing product finance, et cetera, et cetera. And that was like sort of the mindset, because at that point I still like sort of didn't know what I wanted to do personally. And I think like that sort of was what shaped the perspective, right?
Got it. All right. Now let's talk about college, because you didn't study here.
Yeah.
You went to the six and to find Drake in Toronto. There you go.
Shout out Drake.
Running to the six with your woes, technically, but what was it like with different experience from Xavier all the way up north to do again college? How transformative was that, and how did you then find the new communities that became part of?
Like, ever since I was a kid, right, I think I was pushed by my parents to follow that, like, typical narrative of, you know, do well in school, get your degree abroad, work a couple of years there, come back and do something here. I think that's pretty standard, right?
Tiger Asian.
Exactly.
Upbringing. There you go.
Exactly. And so that's what I did, right? And, like, I mean, like, admittedly, like, I'm super blessed and lucky that I was able to study at U of T, University of Toronto. The first few years were there were, like, pretty interesting and pretty tough. I think what I find really interesting looking back is that I was sort of indoctrinated into that whole, like, corporate mindset, right? And I think that that's what I really noticed about myself, right? It went from doing startups every year in high school, and now suddenly I'm like, wow, I want to go investment banking. I want to go consulting. And that's just what everyone else is doing, right? And that kind of, I was kind of indoctrinated for a point in time there and into that way of thinking. There wasn't really a, like, specific community of, like, entrepreneurs that I was able to find directly. So I think, like, that's where I sort of lost my way, admittedly, right? And I mean, but it was super transformative in that what mattered to me most was the people I actually met. Like, that's where I met my co-founder, Martha. She's our COO here at UpNext. And, you know, just, like, the perspectives also. So it really comes back to who you meet, I guess, like, in wherever you are, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I guess, like, yeah, that sort of shifts to the... That was the mindset I had when sort of the pandemic hit. And then when the pandemic, I think, like, that's a totally different story of, like, you know, starting to come back and starting to rebuild back here. But yeah.
But that's very interesting because, again, it's rare. I'm not saying it's not possible, but this is extremely rare to see. Usually it's two paths that I see that are predominantly taken in the tech realm, right? Which is you go hard on product or engineering, you become a really good coder, or you go heavily on business. It's hard that you actually you do both, and you've done both, right? Because at the end of the day, you're a dev, you know how to hack into things, but a lot of the stuff that you actually got into, especially when you go to Toronto, you're taking up commerce. This is business, and a lot of internship that I've seen here. Again, when you were still back home, you're doing product marketing, production, intern. And especially when you got to PDAX, shout out Nichelle. And you were doing finance and marketing. But how did you see things from having those two lenses that you now have? Because as a dev, you're always either problem solving or building, and you see things in code and sequences and logic. We're in business. It's sort of similar, but it operates a different way. How do you then attack scenarios like that?
Well, I think my current hypothesis or current answer to this is that it's still all about the product.
You're using all about the scientific method.
I hope I don't.
Oh, man. Just kidding. No, so what? Yeah.
So I think, like, from all of that, you know, like, having, as you mentioned, having the perspective, I think it really comes down to two things. Like, the current hypothesis, as I mentioned, is it's still all about the product if you actually solve something meaningful for people. But what I've learned recently, and I guess, you know, coming more onto the quote unquote, I guess, like, business side, is really just, like, the value of community and building communities around products. And that's, like, something that's a big part of what I've been doing for the past few years, really just, like, finding people, talking to different people. But, you know, if there's no core solution or core thing that brings people together, then the whole thing kind of falls apart. That's my current working theory, Ron.
Got it. All right. No, it was just totally friends. Makes sense. Yeah. Because if you see the most successful startups here also, right? Again, pun intended, Kumu, which is, again, Kumusta, which is also their, what they call it, community. Right. They have a hardcore community, and they give those communities voices in a way similar to us in Podcast Network Asia. That's what we also give. We give podcasters voices, or these niches as well. And I can name so many more that does the same thing. Right. But in your sense, how did you get to practice that? Because I'm looking at it, you were in the six for 2018 to 2022.
Yeah.
And you had a couple jobs in PDAX in 2019 to 2020, which really coincides with your studies personal. Abroad. How did that work?
Yeah, I mean, it was more of like working on some things on the part-time. I know a bunch of other people who do similar things. So like I know John Young from Avion. He also did like during class, he would do PDAX work, et cetera, et cetera. For my own, it was really more coming back to just supporting them part-time, doing what I could also just support and just like learn. I think like the biggest thing is just like continuous learning, right? So yeah.
And that's true because again, the younger you start, whether it's school required or not, the better you do in the future. Because again, you're 7 years of experience for you at 21. It's crazy. How many 21-year-olds can say that, right? But yes, that was deliberate in terms of what you're doing. But I want to do a deep dive when we come back after our first break on what you actually did in PDAC and helped Nichelle Gaba and what was that like. We'll talk about that more after the break.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate your growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch at SaaSCon PH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April. But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at saaschallenge.ph. That's saaschallenge.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24. And we're back in the break. We're still with Javi Lorenzana of Next. I mean, Up Next, not Next. Up Next. All right. Who again told us how young he started and whatnot. But before we start, Javi, I ended and I cliffhangered everybody on what you actually did for PDAX. Again, PDAX now is considered again. There's a few companies last year, 2021, that we're able to, only three, we're able to raise, no, actually four, if you can't count GCash, that we're able to raise Series B and above. Mm. And I call them the Sunicorns. And I'll say it now, look out after our anniversary, because a lot of these companies are going to be back here in this podcast, because it's about damn time. Yeah. We're going to call it the Sunicorn sessions. But PDAX also is up next, pun intended, you know, in becoming one of them Sunicorns. But when you joined them in 2019 and 2020, there weren't a Sunicorn yet.
Yeah.
What was that like? What were the stuff that you did there?
No, that's true. That's a great thing. I've been thinking about this for a while too. So when I got there, I think it was, I believe they were either pre-seed or seed. And so in that case, it was a very small office. I think there were less than like 20, I want to say like at most 30 people split into just like two rooms. And that was crazy. I think being in that environment, being able to, you know, talk to Nichelle directly, being mentored by people like Kyle, I think that was super, I guess, a transformation in the way I think about startups, because I think that's the startup that I think I really learned the most and had the most like freedom to explore and do things, right? So, yeah.
So what were the things that you did there? And again, you said that's a startup that you, that made you learn the most. And what are those things that you learned that got etched in stone in your startup heart? Right.
So super deliberately, when I came in, I thought I was going to be like specifically doing finance stuff. But I'm talking with their needs and getting to know what they were looking for also. I deliliberately wanted to explore different things, like doing things like market research, doing things like brand positioning, et cetera, right? On top of the finance discussions that we'd have with the business teams and so on. So I think like having that exposure, I think like that's one of the best parts about like joining or working a startup too, right? It's that you really get to carve your own role. And if you're deliberate about it, you can really optimize for, okay, what do I want to learn now? Or what's the thing that I might use in the future, et cetera, et cetera. And now that's like a big part of what's done there for sure.
And that's true. And again, not everybody is built to be founders, right? And that's okay. But you can be a key player in a startup where you actually get to carve your own niche and your ceiling, you define that. Because at the end of the day, again, there's so much work to be done. But again, even if you're not the founder, you get to do founder-like stuff and founder-like experiences that you're going to have.
Exactly.
You're going to carry on for the rest of your life. If you take it on as a career path, per se, and you just love doing startups, the stuff that you learn in like a few months or a year is stuff that other people learn in a normal career path for like 5 to 10 years. And you jumble that on into 1 year. Imagine the growth that you get to learn at that point. Now, after PDAX, what was the next step for you? And obviously you're still doing school because the next one that I've seen, you've done product and you became a dev. So again, what a crazy amount of experience that you've now done. Because this is full circle. This is, again, prep for founder work.
Yeah, going all across the different components for sure. Yeah.
So what was that like?
What was it like? That's an interesting question. Yeah, I'd say like in every internship or new role you take in, I think like what I would generally do is like really just observe, really learn up. I think like that's what a lot of people, or like that's what I missed originally in my first few internships. Like, what's actually expected of me? What can I do? How can I put myself in these roles to perform better? And once I sort of like understood that, it was more of a process of, okay, now that I know the basics and the fundamentals, which, you know, admittedly, like there's not a lot of resources on that. It's sort of hard to curate and find like which specific resources can help you most in those roles. Which I think is something like, if you're a company, that's something you can also help with, right? Like giving new people that context. Right. So once you have that, it's more about, okay, now that I know the basics, now that I know what I can do, what can I really do to support the company, right? To support the company goals.
All right. Now, before we jump into up next, right? And just sum up all these experiences that you did. If you like top of mind, couple lessons that you really got etched in stone before you took the leap of being a founder, what are the main big lessons that you learned that got etched in stone? Like, all right, I've done product, I've done dev, I've done all of these things together. I've seen how founders operate. I've seen how startup teams operate, how they're built. What did you carry on with you before you took that leap?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think what comes top of mind is when you're young and when you're sort of figuring out what you want to do, you don't want to optimize for things like salary yet. I mean, obviously, if you need to, that's a whole different conversation. What I would say is you should really optimize for learning, right? Learning different things, finding people, great conversations. Like, I like to think that books are one of the highest ROI sources of knowledge. second only to just like a great conversation with someone who really knows like what their shit, right? Someone really knows what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. And again, that's why we do podcasts here.
Exactly.
And again, this is why we have this show to at least pass this on to that. So again, conversations, and just imagine the conversations that you've had over the past couple of years.
Actually, Ron, like, you know, you've been talking with people for, I think, 3 years now on this podcast. You've done like so many other networks, like even like for you, right? Like, just what are some of your favorite, say, like lessons from just doing Hustle Share?
So one thing that, wow, first of all, that's a good question. Thank you for that. Because that's my job, but it's all right. It's always fun to get thrown one every once in a while. One thing that there's several lessons that I can share. I'm not going to take too much time because we're going to be talking about up next after this. But one thing is that I don't know. First lesson is I don't know shit. No matter how much I see patterns over certain archetypes of founders. So when I say archetypes of founders, I'd say majority of the founders that I've had in this show are either grassroots, Filipino, came from nothing, had to crawl their way up, didn't have an exposure to entrepreneurship because their parents were not entrepreneurs, but eventually had to figure it out and get exposed to it. They took a longer path because they didn't have that DNA. The second one is local grassroots, but repatriated, worked in the States, studied abroad, whatnot, came back with a whole different mindset and with a whole different ambition, right? As well. And lastly is the expats. And they just come in here in the Philippines, sometimes even not knowing anything about the culture, but they see the macros, the like, oh my God, the talent pool is there. But when I say I don't know shit, is that even if you see those archetypes being similar paths, there's always a defining moment in their journey that made them the founder that they were.
Mm.
So, and you can never predict it because it's usually struggle driven. Yeah. It's usually, again, their ability to rise above atrocities and challenges that defines their themselves as a founder and the startups that they come up with. So I don't know shit because this is what keeps me going. In year three, there's always that new thing that I take on. And second is, it doesn't matter who you talk to, as long as they've been in the startup game, there's always something to learn from someone. And I'm being selfish that way because I get first dibs before I share it to everybody else in the podcast, right? It's like, oh God, I learned that from this. I see myself literally just copying a lot of these things that I've learned from the best of the best out there. Ah, okay. HR, I'll copy how he did this team and I'll do it in my team. That's like, oh, it works and whatnot. It is literally a source of information because you're right. Conversations stick through. In the books, yes, you'll be able to find data. You'd be able to find the same resource. But what's great about these conversations is that it's imbued with emotions and you know, and that voice of how the delivery, and it really sticks through and then it has a bit good recall. I mean, I have a couple more, but that's basically it. And I'm just blessed to give guys like you who are amazing what you do to a platform and immortalize it in this podcast so that kids that are going to be after you, the younger they are, the crazier they get. We'll just like, oh, that's how Hobby did it as well. So those are the things. Right.
Yeah, 100%. And I really love those two things. I think like even for me, specifically, you know, that sort of that phase of struggle is really important. And I love what you said about just like being open-minded and being super curious about like different perspectives. That strikes a chord.
So, absolutely. Yeah, and again, my job is super easy because I just need to bring that out, you know? And me, I'm literally obviously curious about how did you do it, right? What can we learn? Yeah. Just through the podcast, we share it to the rest of the world. All right, let's go back to you because now we talk about Up Next. You took the leap. How did this idea of Up Next, and why did you want to solve the problem of education, especially upskilling actionable courses for professionals? Why this?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know me, like I did sort of well in school. At least I was able to get a UFT. I'm not a person who is like anti-school, right? Like I think school is really important and it's game changing for a lot of people and can like make some really big, great opportunities. There's just a lot of things I really disagree with. And I think there's a lot of things they could be doing better. There's just so much that frustrates me about like the traditional education system, not just here in the Philippines, but even in Canada, right? It's the same. I mean, honestly, right? Like education wise, it's the same content delivered in the same format. There's not much difference. And that was something that I think like was a real mindset shift for me. And so when I sort of got the idea that, hey, right, like I've really been, you know, in this game for a while, I've been like building a network like crazy. I've really tried to really emphasize that as a point of development. It sort of came together where the realization was school is essentially three things. University is essentially three things, right? It's the curriculum, it's the community, and it's the credential. And what we're trying to build is, and what I was thinking at the time, like, wow, what if there was something that could basically deliver 80% or 90% of the value of that education at 10% of the time and cost? And that was where like the inner workings, or that was when like the realization sort of came about. So I want to go to, because you can tell like I'm super passionate about like school.
No, but that's why we have an hour and a half to do this thing. But but I want to understand now. So that was a problem that you're trying to identify. Mm-hmm. You don't school, but why post school or postgraduate stuff that you want to upskill for? Because again, this sub niche that you're actually going into is very, very important, because let's face it, a lot of people in the workforce are under skilled. They don't even have the right skills to contribute at all. And they come in, they're a blank slate. If you're lucky, you hire someone who has the discipline or the potential to be great. But also there's a big chunk of the workforce who are just, again, not ready for hiring at all. It will take years to get them there. And, you know, some people retire without ever reaching their full potential. And even if they go through grad school and get those additional letters on their freaking name on LinkedIn, right? They just never get it. Because despite the education, they cannot apply it on their real life work that creates impact. How did you then now create the product that solves that problem? And how did you build that team to help you build that product?
Right. No, so I think first question, right? I think maybe a misconception is that education for a professional skill set cannot be given to people who are younger. And I think that's when I was 15 and growing up, I really wish that I had that professional education, right? And that's something that I wasn't able. I really wasn't able, like, they don't teach you how to do Excel sheets when you're like in seventh grade, right? they don't teach you that type of stuff. They don't teach you how to talk to users, how to build businesses specifically. And so like, I think that's one misconception where, like, even for us, right? Like we do professional skills and courses, but some of the people applying to us are really young. And some of them, like after courses, like have gone to like great things. Like some of them have landed new roles. They've even raised funding rounds, and they've like, you know, really performing a lot better in the roles. And so I think that's one misconception that the education sort of like, that frustrates me, as I said. And the second thing is, who says learning, like who says college has to end at 22? I find that to be so arbitrary, right? Like who says, why can't you have that continuous community and support while you grow older? And if you can do that with some people who, again, like have really great conversations with people in that space and can learn things that are actually happening and things from top operators who are performing in their roles, I think that's a great way to sort of bridge the problem. And, you know, despite however old you are, you said it yourself, Ron, like even if you're this super experienced professional, you will always be able to learn something from people who are steps ahead of you and steps behind you. Yep. So That's just my take on it. Yeah.
And again, if you're not open to that learning,
you're missing out.
Not just that. You're just literally counting days that you're dead, because you're also going to be passé, right? If you close those doors and like, I cannot learn anymore. I'm good. I have experience. Because that's also the curse of people that have experience. They think that just because, say, I'm talking to this youngin, that I cannot learn from you anymore. Actually, no, it's the opposite, because you're a product of a totally different new world that I would have to then live in, because you're going to be the one creating that new world already. But okay, let's go back to Up Next. And yes. How did you build a team to help solve this problem with you? Because you guys made an amazing product straight off the bat. And again, we'll talk about the accolades in a bit, but let's talk about that team first and the product that you guys built.
Right. So our business is very operationally heavy. Okay. And luckily, I guess like the one thing, again, it's all about like networking at a school. My co-founder is, I will say, just like, I thought I was good at execution, right? Like getting things done, but she would just be like order of magnitude, probably like 10x better at me than like just streamlining, operationalizing things. Like she's a big part of that. So I think like that was one of the first things we're really looking at. Second, I guess like in terms of team, I think like when you mentioned team, it's really more how do you get just like these top operators and top dudes to even like teach with us, right? Because that's crazy. Like the fact that I'm working with people from like Alibaba and like Tech in Asia, I find that crazy, man. Like that's pretty far out. And I mean, it all goes back to, I guess, like my background and sort of like what I've been optimizing for, right? Like, I think the biggest misconception with network building is that it's linear, right? Is that people think like, okay, I meet this guy, I meet like the next higher up, et cetera, et cetera. But really, like, I think networking is just being able to hack your way into opportunities. So can I like share a quick story? Like maybe one might be cool, like on how I did a networking hack. Cool.
Absolutely. And especially at a young age, a lot of people wilt under pressure, and this is like, I'm too young, I don't want to be I don't want to punch above my weight class. And especially in Asia, exactly. They're designed, there's always a ceiling that nope, you cannot sit with us because you're too young and whatnot. How did you break through those?
So I think like the thing there is that it's really not transactional. If you can make yourself useful to someone in any way, that's great. But at the end of the day, if you come off as someone as like who's super curious, who wants to learn, people want to share that, right? Like people, like Iran, like you gave me like such great like lessons from what you're doing. It's a privilege to be able to share lessons. You just have to appear earnest and like obviously, I mean, don't be a jerk to them for sure. Like, don't be super forward.
That's true. Don't be an asshole. There you go.
Yeah, don't be an asshole. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, like going back to like the story, I mean, like on like I guess like some examples that other people might find inspiring or like might take from is, so when we were like in the PDAX days, I think this was 1 year into university for me, sort of that summer. My friend John and I, we found this really cool tech conference in Hong Kong, and it's called Rise. Are you familiar with Rise Web Summit?
When people still can go to Hong Kong, and it was still Hong Kong, pre-China Hong Kong, where it,
exactly
before they got bamboozled.
Oh, but man. I miss it. Yeah. So yeah, we saw the website, and we really just, we're scrolling through the people, right? And we see like great people, like you know, product lead at Stripe, founder at like StockX, founder at like Grab or whatever. And we just look at each other and we're like, yo, we have to get in here. And so we scroll over to the tickets and we see that the cheapest ticket is $2,000. And like, I don't have that money lying around, right? And we see the most expensive, like elite tier ticket, I think is like 20K USD. So that's like a million pesos. Mm. Like, dude, like, I don't have that money. I'm an intern at PDAX, dude. What am I going to do? Right. So what we end up doing is we actually, we create this blog. And the blog's name is titled Dropout Learning, because who in Silicon Valley doesn't like smart dropouts? Wow. And what we do is we post like a couple of articles there, different like stories and different things we've learned, obviously. And what we do is we boost it for like $50 on Facebook. Okay. And after a week, we get 35K views on it.
Wow. Right?
And what we do is we go to Rise, say, hey, Rise. We're a media company. We have a 35K viewership. Can we cover your event? And like after a few weeks of back and forth, they were like, hey, can you come to our event? We'll give it to you for free, the elite tier for free. And can you cover, can you interview people? And
when we were serious?
That was like the crazy experience. We got to talk with people from like CNBC, like StockX, Joss Uber. And I think like the most impactful conversation there was the meeting Will Gabrick, who is the CPO at Stripe. And what he told, we told him our story, it was super cool, whatever. And he was like, hey, like, that's great, guys. Like, but maybe it's time to stop hacking into conferences and it's time to start building. And for me and John, right, that's where we're at now. So shout out to John, shout out to Will Gabrick.
Oh, that's great. But that's also what it takes. You know, people always think that there's only one or two paths to get there. And in reality, you carve that your own, but majority of them are those paths that lead you to success are not the ones that are right in front of you. It's hidden within plain sight. You just have to, find the back door.
Find them. Yeah, exactly. Oh, I love that. Find the back door. Exactly.
There's always a back door, I swear.
There's always a back door.
And again, all right, now there was an onus that you need to start building and stop hacking. How did you guys start building, and what was the product that you built with this team?
Yeah, so it was very scrappy. Very, very, very scrappy. So we started in March of 2020. So like last year, 10 months ago, something like that. And it was literally me. It was really me teaching the course. And I'm like, dude, what do I know, right? I've been here.
Who are your students?
So we basically got like 20 people just like to test out the course. And we posted like on Startup PH, the typical route of getting users. And then we ended up with a cohort of 20 people. Obviously, like we had built up a good network. So we invited some people to give guest lectures, case studies. Yeah. And it was good, right? So that was a process of iteration. But it was a lot of imposter syndrome. They're getting around like, dude, what do these like other kids have to learn from me?
Right. What did you teach?
So the first course was really about like entrepreneurship and founders. And I think that was a great exercise for me because I think that sort of formalized and laid the foundation of what I know as a founder today. So I think like that was, that's what set the precedent. So we did a cohort. I think like after when we thought of the idea in March, we launched it in April. Did another one in June, and that was just like the hard times, bootstrap. Yeah. You have to set all the calls, you have to email all the people, you have to connect so many different people. That was the hard part, right?
Yeah.
So that was how it started. It was very manual, very bootstrap for sure. One of the hardest periods in the history of the company for sure.
Absolutely. But how did you find the right business model? Because I'm not sure if you actually charged for those things that you did, but obviously now with the product that you guys have, That ain't for free, right? And you had to find a way to monetize that and create a repeatable and scalable business model that works, right? But how did that go from MVP or concierging this whole thing into something that people would be willing to pay for?
Yeah, I think maybe one of the mistakes founders do is they make their products free. And okay, like this is some advice from like our mentors, but we'll get to that later. When you charge your product free, like, I don't think you get the best feedback, right? It's a very different experience of the person who paid for it. When the person who pays for it gives feedback, because like it's more, you can tell like they actually have some skin in the game or reason to give you feedback. So for us, we knew like we had to validate it well, right? So like we were like, okay, let's charge, but like let's set a really cheap price for it. So the first cohort's really like $50. Full pass entry to the cohort, to the community, et cetera, et cetera. And I guess like the value proposition there was like, you get to meet different people. You get to learn from us. You get to continue growing. So like, that's how it went from MVP. Of course, now, as we continue to, I guess, like learn and iterate, learn what students actually wanted to see, iterate and build better features for the community. That's when it, I guess, inched closer towards where we are at today. And like the biggest change obviously is just like, like the caliber of our instructors is really changing. The level of and the depth, I think, of our content is like really what changed from like literally just me teaching people what I read on Paul Graham's blog.
On YC Startup School.
It was fun. It's an iterative process sure. But
But that's good. But I wanna find out about this before we take our last break. Not all feedback is great. And a lot of founders that, especially in their first startups, get drowned in that feedback, especially if they didn't do their experiments right. Mm. Right? Again, so that's a good tip already. Charge from day one. Don't do something for free. And don't do it with your friends or friends.
Don't undervalue your product. If you have something that's worth something, then believe in it. I think that's their mindset.
And don't do it with your friends and family. They're just there not to hurt you. Okay? They're the worst people to ask. Random people. That's who you need who'd actually pay for it.
Shout out Startup PH.
There you go. and a lot of people, Startup PH is a very beautiful community. I mean, I'm an admin there. We weed out the bad shit. Don't worry. Shout out to Christian Blanquera who created Startup PH 11 years ago. But Yeah, that's basically it. You gotta find the right feedback. But for you, how did you get the right feedback to continue building the stuff that matters? Because again, a lot of founders get lost in the fray in this stage, and you end up building something that more people don't want, right? But how did you get the right feedback to just keep building the stuff that more people would want?
Yeah, no, that's a great thing. So obviously, I think the mindset of being just like super honest, like brutally honest with yourself, hey, this isn't working, is something that if you don't have, obviously like it won't matter, because if you get bad feedback, you'll just ignore it. Just talk, like honestly, just like talk to people, just talk to users. There were weeks where literally all I do is, I've had like 4 hours straight of like student calls every week, and I would just talk to them like, yo, like, is this working? Is this not working? Mm-hmm. How can I help? Even if it's like not specifically like the cohort, it's like, you're building this, like, is there any way I can make myself useful? Right. I think that's a really simple answer. Like, honestly, like, you can go into the tactics, you can go into like specific questions or like methods to ask, but at the end of the day, just be genuinely curious about your users and talk to them is what's good. And I think like, so talking and building your business around users is one thing. I think one thing, I think like the favorite tip I've gotten, shout out Suken, so far in this whole like business crazy startup world or whatever, is you don't just have to build a business for users. Build the business that you want to build, right? Like that's like so big. Like if you're not building the business that you want to build, then you won't enjoy it. And if you're not enjoying it, you won't stay. And in that case, like it's really longevity, right? That's key. So build the business like you want to build also.
Do it like an Asian, right? You know, you're not here for the quick flip. You're here for a legacy type of business. And in order for you to have that longevity, you gotta love that thing. And you're gonna find ways to fall in love with that thing over and over again through the years. All right. Yeah. Now let's take our last break, and when we come back, let's now pay it forward and see additional stuff and how did you actually scale this up. That's up next. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that more after the break.
Hey Hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup, because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes. All the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.eh payroll-starter-monthly-5k, or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey Hustlers, wish there was an easy way to open a bank account and grow your money without the hassle of lengthy application process and income documents? Well, I got good news, because today's sponsor, Uno Digital Bank, is here to help you achieve your financial goals. You can easily open an account with the Uno app in just 5 minutes and one valid ID. And as one of the 6 digital banks licensed by the Banco Central ng Pilipinas, the company is committed to providing customers with simpler, better, and more accessible banking. Last year, Uno Bank was recognized by the Asia Banking and Finance Awards and bagged the title Open Banking Initiative of the Year due to the success of its partnership with GCash, one of the Philippines' leading mobile wallet platforms. And with the Uno mobile app, you can access an hashtag Uno Ready Savings account and enjoy daily interest crediting. With their hashtag Uno Earn or hashtag Uno Boost Time Deposit accounts, you can enjoy a high interest rate of up to 6.5% per annum. Enjoy monthly payouts with hashtag Uno Earn and flexible tenors with hashtag Uno Boost. Other app features include pay bills, the Uno Virtual Debit MasterCard, life insurance, scan and pay with QRPH, and phones. And the one thing that I really love about Uno Digital Bank is they're open to collaborate with a lot of Filipino startups. I've had a chance to see the partnerships that they've had lined up with the startups that they have, and it's truly exciting to see how a digital bank like Uno can enable startups to unlock the power of fintech through digital banking. So if you're ready to elevate your banking experience, Download the Uno mobile app today from the Google Play Store or App Store. Or if you want to collaborate with them, I'll be happy to give you an intro. Just shoot us an email at hello@huffleshare.com. Hey, hustlers, I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor, Dragon Pay, is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, Dragon Pay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disburse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. Dragon Pay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit Dragon Pay is. Dragon Pay was named FinTech of the Year at last year's Philippine FinTech Festival in 2020. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer. Trust Dragon Pay. And we're back from the break. We're still with Javi Lorendana of Up Next again. Will tell us, who told us actually, how they got the product out, why they made it. But let's talk about traction now, because I'm not going to get you this young, this early, if I didn't see something special in what you guys do, right? And just like our season premiere this year, the young kids from Acad Arena, who literally just graduated from Iterative, basically the YC of Southeast Asia, you also got into Iterative,
yes,
this year again. But the best deals, and again, it's exciting because it's hyper localized here, and they understand the nuances.
Love those guys.
Of how to do business in Southeast Asia. Not saying that the YC, obviously YC is still YC, but to have this and have the same results is just absolutely bonkersly amazing. But how did you build up from those early classes to get the necessary traction that you need that inevitably got you through Iterative?
Yeah. No, as I mentioned, it's a lot of bootstrapping. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of risk taking. So we did like a bunch of different types of classes and programs too. And sort of what we, when it was time to talk to Iterative, it was really a matter of painting it in a narrative that made sense, which is where we are at right now. And those guys like have a really, I think like what's special about hyper-localized, I guess like institutions like Iterative and like even what we're trying to build super hyper-localized is that they know the specific problems that are happening in this region. And if you're able to repackage or like reinstate and build a narrative around, hey, these are the problems that are happening here, right? So it comes back to having that narrative, right? So it's team time traction. I think like for anyone like who really is like looking for anything, it's team, who are you? Why are you the people to build this? The track, the TAM, like how big could this be? And then the traction, which is sort of like your evidence that this could work. So it's about packaging that well.
No, at the end of the day, that's it. And again, in any accelerator, that's basically the holy grail. Again, dozens and dozens, probably even hundreds of startups join these types of accelerators, but only a select few got in. How did you, what are the things you think you did right that got you into Brian and Sue Kent's radar? Because they probably say no to more people than they say yes to people.
Yeah. What did we do? Okay, I can give this like tip. So basically we had our first, the first one-on-one with Sue Kent, sort of like getting to, I think like the other thing is we applied ridiculously early. I think we applied like 5 months.
Oh, wow.
I think like the deadline was yesterday or something like that. And we applied like 5 months earlier. Shout out to Martha, because Martha, my co-founder, was the one who got kind of pushed for that. So we had the for initial interview, and right like off the bat, it could see it's like, hey, Sue Kent sent me a reply email. Hey, like, I'm not sure what you guys are going to be working on, like blah, blah, blah. You know, the usual like follow-up question stuff. And I think what really changed and like what other people tell me is like how, I guess like we learned from our users, and how we continue to learn from our users is the biggest. I assume. I mean, I don't know what they're thinking. I assume like learning from users and like being able to discover trends, be super data driven with the statistics. That I think like was the biggest thing that they sort of saw, right? Potential wise. And as a young founder, right? Like unproven, like who am I, man? Like who am I to be excited to like this iterative thing? It's like you need to display like a really good potential for growth. And again, like how you do that is you have sort of like your narrative, what you've been doing, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what I would say, right? It's like you just learn from users, be super, super user focused, build something that people will actually use, build people something people actually want. So yeah.
Got it. And specifically in this Team TAM traction, you know, troika or triumvirate that you want to say, team is very easy to define. Again, who's your gang, right? And then traction also speaks for itself. But this is where people fuck it up most of the time. It's TAM, it's total addressable market, right? And how did you guys define your total addressable market? Though again, you guys were hyper focused on this type of niche, and majority of the time, most people either hyper focus, they undervalue their TAM. Yeah. Or they go, oh,
is our
$1 billion market, and how come you're the only one who saw this, right? But how did you guys define that on your end?
How did we define it? Yeah, so I think the interesting thing about time, right? It's really, as you said, it's really as much of art as it is a science. And what you have, I think, like my best advice for people doing their time is you have to be really clear on your assumptions. You know, who are the specific people you're targeting? How much will they actually pay? Why? Like, it's just like it's the basics. Again, you can talk about like so many of the tactics, so many of like the financial models, discounted DCF, whatever. But at the end of the day, it's about like the assumptions you make, and are those actually believable? Being able to identify a clear market segment, who you want to start with, right? Understanding the value proposition and how much they would be able to pay for it. It's the basics, right? And it's about like really transforming those basics into a compelling, digestible narrative that makes sense.
All right, now let's talk about traction, because you had to hustle for that early traction.
Oh man,
you can't get to iterative if you're just gonna dick around. You know, hearing what they had to do with ACAD Arena had to go through. You know, when they were the lace in their end, they had to really compensate for that and catch up. For you guys, how did you get that traction? Because at the end of the day, revenue is king in traction. I don't care, again, what it is. If you join a startup or an accelerator like this, you can't just be like, yeah, I have these vanity metrics. Nobody gives a shit about that, right?
Yeah.
You need to get the metrics revenue. That matter. And especially majority of the time, that's revenue-driven also. How did you guys do that for you guys?
You know, again, it was... Though, like I will say, like those are the hardest periods of the company, where it was just us bootstrapping, setting all of those calls. I think like a general framework that might help, that at least worked for us, is when you're a startup and when you're trying to get revenue, you're trying. I think it makes sense to optimize for growth instead of margin, right? And what that means is you want as many people testing your product who have paid, so they give you great feedback. And that's what you want, right? That's what you want the feedback for to keep improving. But you don't want to optimize for margin too early. Margin is sort of like, of course, like how much you're making per customer, upcharging, doing all that tactical pricing and stuff. Once you're at a point where you can confidently say, like, hey, this is a product that can work for people, I think that's when you start increasing the margin. But when you're a startup and getting that initial traction, you just have to hack it out, man. Like there's no other way. There's really no other way. Talk to users, talk to like 50 users a week. That's literally what we were doing, right? Talking to 50 users per week, like call after call after call. So yeah, it's tough. It'll be tough, but it'll be worth it. And like just the learning you get gives you that, I guess, like domain expertise that you can't really communicate, right? It's the tacit knowledge. It's just intuition at that point. So yeah.
Sounds good. All right. Now, last few questions before I let you go.
Sure.
Again, I know there's a lot of bombs that you're going to be dropping, but again, just really thought, wait it out a little bit more, but you're going to be seeing a lot about these guys very soon. But if you had the ability to talk to a Javi in a parallel universe who's probably going through the same thing, what would be the advice that you would give them to further equip you in this early path that you went through?
Yeah, is it okay if like I sort of talk to? I think what I might have good advice for is sort of like the Javi who was like literally like building it at the start, right? So I think just to set the context, it was 2020, pandemic just hit, and when I saw the option that like, hey, it's gonna be online school, I was like, no, right? Like, that's not worth my time. I'm not gonna do that. And so what I did was I took a break, right? I took a gap year from school. So I'm actually like currently still on that gap year, and really like that gap year. Before that those like 9 months before I so that was 2020 we started working, that was 2021 so those like 9 months or 10 months where I was just like doing nothing, like I was sitting on my bed, I was like eating chips, I was like, people were building some cool projects, and I was just like, wow man, like I think like the advice that like I gave myself and that I really would give that person is like, just take the time to really be honest with yourself and really do what you want to do, right? Like, I think like that's the mindset that like really, I think like I really wanted to have, and something that I think like kind of worked out, right? So it's like, take that sabbatical, take like that gap year, don't follow anyone's like narrative of like what you can or cannot do. Just like live the life like you want to live, right? And I think that's the best anyone can do. At that point in time, like I was super lost. Dude, like I was just like reading books. I was just eating chips.
Yeah,
and it was kind of painful, like because I wasn't doing anything. I was just on my bed. Mm. And that point in time, you might be like really discouraged, but just keep thinking, just keep iterating, do like smallest projects you can do, and if you're persistent enough and if you're honest with yourself enough, then you'll eventually build something that really resonates with you. And I'm super lucky. I'm super blessed that I'm in this situation where I get to do that now.
Yeah, but it's hard to persist if you kind of have no idea where you're going. How did you get out of that bump? Hard. Persist through, right? Because again, it's easy to persist when you have a path that you've seen it. All right, I got my flow, I got my mojo back, right?
Yeah.
But from a 9 month again sabbatical, or again that state that you're in, how do you get out of that funk and then persist through? Because one thing that you need is that inertia. Yeah. So that you would then have that ability to build momentum, right? Yeah. Or that kinetic energy. I'm just going to throw physics shit out there. I don't know which one is right. Yeah, yeah. But I'm just going to throw them all there until you build momentum. You know, how do you do that?
Yeah, no, I think the misconception is that it's a funk, and I don't think it's a funk, right? Like you can choose to interpret like doing nothing, being in like a sabbatical and nothing, like nothing's going on as a funk. But I mean, that's just life, right? Like when I was thinking about it, I was like, even now I'm like, okay, I'm building this company, but like my experience is the same, right? I'm still here. I'm still in my room. I'm still doing like random stuff. I mean, you can choose to interpret it as something bad, but if you sort of take a step back and say, hey, right, like enjoy what I'm doing today. I'm going to enjoy like my pancit canton. I'm going to take a deep breath, understanding that this is what life is, right? It's sort of a different perspective. And I think that's what keeps you going, right? There are a lot of times where I like felt like really pressured to like, I was super anxious about like, what am I going to do? Mm. But just, I think like if you focus on like living it one day at a time, I think that's a really meaningful way. And I think that's like a mindset that really helped me. And I think it's a mindset that anyone who does feel stuck or does feel kind of lost, right? Just take a deep breath, enjoy your food, talk to someone you love. And I think like that's the best you can do, right?
All right. That is amazing. And again, I'm pretty sure you got a lot of up and coming stuff up next for you guys. But again, before I let you go, Javi, what's next for you guys? And if they want to reach out and people are listening to this and they want to try up next again. Just give us a glimpse of what's coming up in the next coming weeks or months, you know, that we can't talk about while we're recording this. What do you guys have in the very near future?
Yeah, thanks, Ron. So if you guys are interested in being a part of our growing community, we're launching a growth specific course. This is where you get sort of the mindsets on how to grow a business, how to, you know, really delight customers and sort of like build that loop. Then you should definitely apply to our courses at our website, upnext.so. So that's upnext.so. javilaurentin.so. For me personally, you can find me on Twitter at javilaurentin. And I also write a newsletter at zana.vc. I'm not a VC, but
soon enough.
I just thought the
domain. You're 21. Come on. Cool. I'm pretty sure it's 31.
Yeah.
There.
VC, yeah. Thanks so much, man. Good. I really enjoyed this conversation.
And again, we wish you well, and I'm pretty sure we're going to be hearing a lot more about you guys very soon. But before I let you go, follow this whatever podcast app you're listening to, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts. And again, if you see some stars in whatever podcast, especially in Apple and Spotify, give us some 5 stars there. It just helps us get discovered by more hustlers also that are listening to this. And again, if we did say some jargon, it's going to be in the show notes on HustleShare.com. And lastly, if you also want to be part of our community, it's going to be in the HustleShare community on Facebook. Again, Javi, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Ron.
All right, I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.